All right, good morning. We are going to get started. My name is Hope Hogan. I'm the administrative law judge designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings upon the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as a hearing officer for today's hearings. Let the record show that it is April 17, 2020 at 9:30 a.m. This hearing today is being held electronically and being streamed via the Public Service Commission website and via telephone. The public is encouraged to view the hearing electronically through a link on the Public Service Commission's website or listen telephonically at 1-888-585-9008 with room code access number 259-316-322. This is a time, date, and place set by the notice of filing and notice of consolidated hearings issued by the Public Service Commission on February 19, 2020, and an amended notice issued on April 9, 2020 for case numbers PU-19-376 and PU-19-377. This is a hearing for a December 5th, 2019 application of Northern Divide Wind LLC for a certificate of site compatibility to construct an up to 200 megawatt Northern Divide Wind Energy Center consisting of up to 76 wind turbine generators and associated facilities in Burke County, North Dakota. The PSC has assigned this application, case number PU-19-376. This is also the hearing for an application of Northern Divide Wind LLC for a corridor certificate and route permit to construct approximately a 41-mile of 345-kilovolt electric transmission line and associated facilities extending from the 200-megawatt Northern Divide Wind Energy Center in Burke County to Basin Electric's Tandy Substation in Montreal County, North Dakota. The PSC has assigned this application, case number PU-19-377. The notice of filing and notice of hearing specified the following issues to be considered and determined at this hearing. Will the location and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimum adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? And will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environment impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? I would remind all the participants for today's hearing to mute their microphones and cameras when not speaking and unmute your microphone and camera when speaking. I will try to take short breaks every hour and a half or so throughout our hearing today. But if somebody needs a break, please let me know. We will now have the parties make their appearances. I'll start with you, Ms. Feary, on behalf of the applicant. Can you please state your appearance for the record and introduce anyone appearing with you today?
Thank you, Your Honor. Casey Feary with Crowley Flex. Appearing on behalf of Northern Divide Wind, LLC. Appearing with me today is my colleague, Eric Edison, as well as Tracy Davis, Senior Attorney with NextEra.
And Ms. Feary, how many witnesses will you be having testify today?
Your Honor, at this time, we intend to call 4 witnesses.
Did you want to state their names?
Yes. The first witness that we intend to call is Mr. Clay Cameron. And Mr. Cameron is the project manager. And he will speak to issues regarding general project development and provide details regarding the scope and just general nature of the project facilities. Our second witness is Mr. Sean Harrington. He is the Director of Construction. He will be speaking to issues relating to EPC, contracting, worker safety, and COVID-19 considerations. Our third witness is Mr. Dustin Jones. He is the environmental manager with respect to the project. He will be speaking to wildlife and environmental studies that were conducted for the project and agency and tribal consultation, coordination, and other topics such as shadow flicker and sound assessment. And then our fourth witness that we intend to call is Mr. Clayton Derby, senior wildlife biologist with West, and he will provide additional discussion and context regarding the results of the wildlife studies that were conducted for the project.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt, did you want to state your appearance for the record and introduce any members of the commission staff who will be participating in the hearing today?
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Brian Schmidt, Special Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Public Service Commission. Jerry Lean, who is a public utility analyst with PSC staff, will also be appearing remotely with me, and we will ask that Mr. Lean have the opportunity to ask questions during the hearing today.
Thank you. Prior to today's hearing, a petition for intervention was filed by the Laborers District Council of Minnesota and North Dakota. That petition for intervention was granted. Mr. Pranis, would you like to state your appearance for the record and introduce anybody appearing with you today?
Thank you, Your Honor. Kevin Pranis, marketing manager for Lion of Minnesota and North Dakota, also known as the Laborers District Council of Minnesota and North Dakota, appearing on their behalf. And we will be presenting two witnesses, Dr. Lucas Franco, who is the research manager for Lion of Minnesota and North Dakota, who will speak about research on the economic impacts of local labor in the construction of wind energy facilities and the broader socioeconomic impacts, as well as the feasibility of employing local labor. And Steve Cortina, who is a marketing representative for Lion of Minnesota and North Dakota, based in Bismarck. Mr. Cortina also has experience in the wind industry and will speak to his experience about the recruiting, training, and deployment of skilled local labor on wind energy facilities and the economic impact that that has for the workforce and for their communities.
Thank you. For this hearing, public testimony will be received in two ways. You can provide written testimony. Beginning today until April 27, 2020, the PSC will accept written testimony. That testimony can be submitted either by email to ndpsc@nd.gov or by mail addressed to the Public Service Commission at 600 East Boulevard Avenue, Department 408, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58505-0480. The commission would ask that your written testimony provide your name, the entity or group that you are representing, if you are representing an entity or group. If you are a landowner, please provide the location of any property that you own, the section, township, range, and which part of the project are you participating in, the wind farm or the transmission line. You can also provide testimony by telephone today. If you wish to provide telephonic testimony today, we ask that you please let us know by calling 701-328-4081 and leave your name and a number to reach you at. Following the presentation of the applicant's witnesses, we will call you back to provide your telephonic testimony. If your testimony involves any photographs or other documents, you can either email those today prior to your testimony or provide them afterwards during the written testimony comment period. I encourage you to take the opportunity to tell the commissioners anything you think the commission should know about this matter, either in writing or through telephonic testimony. I assure you that what you have to say is important to the commission and will be considered by the commission. At this time, we will take opening comments from the commissioners. Commissioner Fedorchak, would you like to make opening comments?
Absolutely, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, very good. You look very official there, Hope, in the hearing room. I like it.
Thank you.
With the flags behind you. Looks good. Well, welcome, everybody. We sure appreciate all the accommodations that have been made to move ahead with this hearing today and have more certainty when there is these uncertain times. I mean, that's just a goal of the commission, is to try to continue to provide the service that we're obligated to provide under the law, despite the challenging times. So necessity is a mother of invention, they say, and here's what we came up with for this hearing. You know, we've wanted to incorporate more electronic means and a way to improve public access to our hearings for quite some time in the commission, and this really just provided a trigger, a really important trigger for us to do that. And I expect that we won't use all of these, but we will incorporate some of these in moving forward in all of our hearings. So thanks to our IT staff and everybody else who made this possible. So the company has provided a lot of information in advance in this, and I encourage anyone who's watching from home and has access to the internet to log on to the Public Service Commission website, and you can pull up the full application that the company has and all of the information, and you can look at what we're looking at in our big books and online. It's right there on the home page. You can find a link to, it's called the docket, and that includes everything that we have in front of us, all the material, all the maps, everything is there. So I encourage the public to take advantage of that and see what we see as evidence in the application. So there's a lot of that. There's been a ton of correspondence between the agencies. At the last hearing, we had extensive questioning. It was a very, very long hearing. I think it was probably 14 hours or so. And there was extensive questioning and review. And some of this application is very similar to that. So I guess I'm saying all of that because I think that with the advanced testimony, with the application, and with our previous hearing, a lot of ground has already been covered on this project. And so for myself, there isn't going to be as much questioning of the experts as there was in the past one, because there isn't as much disagreement, quite honestly, in terms of some of the biological impacts, which really caused the last hearing to take a long, long time. That's not to say we won't be thorough, we will, but I think the big point is we'll get to the public testimony sooner, I hope, than we did at the last hearing. I think we didn't take public testimony until about 4 or 5 o'clock, and I expect that we'll get there several hours sooner this time. That's my hope. So hang with us. Our goal here is to get through all the information and to consider it as the state standard, which is minimal impact. That isn't no impact, that's minimal impact. And so that's a standard the company has to achieve over the course of this application and our review in order to receive the permit. And that's the lens with which we'll be viewing today's materials and the application as a whole. So I look forward to hearing from the public. Be patient, let us know if there's issues, we'll address them. But we want to hear from you and look forward to having a good discussion through electronic means today about this project, which I know is very important to a lot of people up in Burke County. So thank you for participating. We look forward to a productive hearing today. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak. Commissioner Crotchis, do you have any opening comments?
Good morning, everybody. I would echo many of the same thoughts, and I do recognize that we had a number of individuals who reached out to the commission who were concerned about how we would proceed today. And those concerns are definitely heard. I view this as an opportunity for more individuals to be involved simply through calling to be able to provide testimony if you so choose. And I would encourage that. If you have something to say, we certainly want to hear from you. One thing this is not about, and these are some of the comments I made at other hearings, so it isn't unique to just this project. This isn't about a fossil fuel versus renewable debate. It's not about the economic comparison between those two. And we do hear a lot of that, and I think there is a time and a place for those questions, for that debate, but this is about comparing the company's application to Siting 1 and seeing how that lines up with the requirements as stated in statute. So that is the comparison we will be making as we go through this particular proceeding. And I do think this will open the door for greater public access in the future, some of the things that we are doing. It's not always convenient for an individual to be on site the day of the hearing. It could be spring planting for an agricultural producer. They could be calving. It could be someone with other business interests. It could be someone from the general public that simply isn't in the area when we hold a particular hearing. So we are providing that type of access. The record will be kept open, as mentioned, until April 27th, which I think provides ample opportunity for people to weigh in. And again, I look forward to hearing from all parties and appreciate everybody's time today. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Crotchis. Commissioner Chrisman, would you like to make opening comments?
Yes, Your Honor, and thank you. And before I do, could I get a clarification? I'm assuming that we're going to do one case first, probably the wind farm, and then take public comments on that subject and then go into the other case, or do you plan on combining them?
Ms. Feary, maybe you want to clarify?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. Since the cases are consolidated, Commissioner Chrisman, we would speak to both projects at the same time through witness testimony, so it wouldn't be a staggered process where the beginning is specific to the wind project, and then there's a second portion that's specific to the transmission facility. It would be a combined hearing on both project applications. And that's similar to what was done at the previous hearing as well.
Thank you, Ms. Feary.
So, knowing that these hearings can get rather long, and a lot of the people that don't do this all the time, maybe this is the first time they've ever been involved in something like this, when we ask them to call in if they want to provide sworn testimony to us and testify today, it would be nice, I think, if they could have some idea of how long that might take. And I know it's difficult for the company because they don't know what questions you, Your Honor, might have, or our staff or the commissioners, but they've worked through cases like this and can gauge it certainly much better than the public. So if they have some idea, I think it would be helpful so that people aren't waiting around thinking they're getting a call back in a half hour or an hour, when in fact it might be 4 hours or 8 hours or 12 hours. That's a more accurate estimate. But so I think that would be helpful. And then getting to my comments in general on these, typically we would be having a hearing in the county. And I like those. I value the opportunity to sit face to face with the people that live there and hear what they have to say and ask questions and that sort of thing. The environment we're in right now doesn't make that possible. And so we've gone to great lengths to accommodate a hearing in many ways, as has been stated, it might be a better way. But in many ways, it's going to be a learning process and probably provide some discomfort for people. But I do hope that people that have something to say understand that just because we're not there with you face to face, it doesn't mean that we take your opinions any less seriously. I've always valued the information we get at these public hearings because, frankly, it helps us to make the best possible decision, and that's the goal here. So I hope you won't be bothered by that, and we'll go ahead and present your opinions and testimony to us and help us reach that best possible conclusion, and that we can do this in an orderly way here and maintain connections and everything and work through the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. And to your point about the time frame for today's hearings, my best guess is that we won't get to public comment until early to mid-afternoon. The applicant intends to call 4 witnesses. The intervener intends to call 2 witnesses. And while this application may be somewhat unusual in that it's very similar to the previous one, that's still a lot of witnesses to get through before we get to public comments. So that's my best guess. Ms. Fury, does that sound about right to you?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that. And I guess just so that everyone is aware, 3 of the witnesses have submitted pre-filed testimony. And so we do imagine that that will shorten the amount of, or the duration of time that our direct testimony will go. Instead of walking through the pre-files testimony verbatim, we intend to provide very high-level summaries just to respect everyone's time.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Fury. I want to chat about the exhibits next. I received exhibits labeled 1 through 21 from the applicant. Ms. Fury, did you want to offer those now, or was your intent to offer them throughout the hearing?
Your Honor, I would like to offer those now, and if I may just explain the exhibit list briefly.
Go ahead.
On April 1st, we submitted a proposed hearing exhibit list, and that included exhibits number 1 through 17. And those materials just generally include the project application, supplemental information that was filed, various different agency correspondence, and then a project map. And since the time of that filing, various agencies and interested parties subsequently filed comments in the project docket. And so yesterday we filed a proposed updated exhibit list just to identify those items that were subsequently docketed in the project docket. And so the updated hearing list includes exhibits 18 through 21. And exhibits 18, 19, and 20 have been previously docketed items. The only quote-unquote new item that is listed on the exhibit list that wasn't previously docketed and was just submitted yesterday is the updated correspondence from the SHPO, and that's the exhibit 21.
Thank you, Ms. Fury.
And so,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say we would move for the mission of exhibits number 1 through 21 as designated on the updated proposed hearing exhibit list.
Thank you. Mr. Schmidt, is there any objection to the exhibits?
No objection, Your Honor.
Mr. Pranis, did you have any objection to the exhibits?
No objection, Your Honor.
All right, then exhibits 1 through 21 will be admitted into the record, and I will note for the public that the exhibits can be found on the Public Service Commission's website on the docket for this case. I also received exhibits labeled I-1 through I-5 from the intervener. Mr. Pranis, would you like to offer those exhibits now or during the testimony you intend to present today?
I would, Your Honor, thank you. We would like to introduce exhibits I-1 through I-5, and to briefly summarize these exhibits, we've likewise filed pre-filed testimony for Dr. Franco and Mr. Cortina, as well as related documents and analysis prepared by Dr. Franco, and a legal opinion letter that I think will be familiar to the commissioners and the administrative law judge, which was also submitted in a separate case, in the Russo Wind case, as well as a letter related from an investment firm that invests in renewable energy that's referred to in the testimony and supplements the testimony that's provided. And we would move to introduce those exhibits.
All right, thank you. Ms. Fury, is there any objection to the intervener's exhibits?
No objection, Your Honor.
Mr. Schmidt, is there any objection to the intervener's exhibits?
No objection.
All right, then exhibits I-1 through I-5 will also be admitted into the record. Ms. Fury, did you want to make opening remarks or call your first witness?
Judge, I have a question.
Go ahead, Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Those exhibits from the intervener, are they docketed or where are they available?
I believe they were just filed 2 days ago. I'm not sure if they've been docketed yet.
Okay.
I can check.
I'm looking. Oh.
Commissioner, it appears that they have not been docketed yet.
All right. Okay.
We were unclear on the proceed, what needed to be provided in writing. Given the COVID restrictions, we had supplied them by email, but we're unclear about whether we needed to deliver them in person.
All right.
Okay. Well, if we have them by email, we can get them uploaded. So very good. Thank you.
All right. Ms. Fury, did you want to make any opening remarks or call your first witness?
We would like to call our first witness at this time, Your Honor, Mr. Clay Cameron.
All right. Mr. Cameron, if you want to unmute your phone and your camera, that would be great. I think your camera for sure is unmuted. Before you testify today, Mr. Cameron, I am required by law to advise you on the maximum penalty for perjury in the state of North Dakota. It's a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Do you understand what perjury is?
Yes, Your Honor.
And being advised on the potential penalties for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this case today?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Fury.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Cameron, can you please introduce yourself to the commission?
Yes. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Clay Cameron. I'm the senior project manager for NextEra Energy Resources, LLC. I am testifying on behalf of the applicant, Northern Divide Wind, LLC. Northern Divide Wind, LLC is an indirect, wholly owned subsidiary of NextEra. I am the project manager of Northern Divide Wind's proposed wind and transmission projects.
And can you please briefly describe your educational and professional background?
Yes, I studied business management at Louisiana State University. I hold a state of Florida general contractor's license and a state of California general engineering license. I have over 20 years of experience in project management, including development and federal, state, and local permitting of large construction projects across the country. For the past 10 years with NextEra, I have held various roles pertaining to project development, engineering, and construction oversight.
And can you please provide a brief overview of Northern Divide Wind's proposed project?
Yes, the wind project is 200 megawatts, encompassing approximately 10,912 acres in Burke County. The project consist of 74 primary turbines and 4 alternate turbine locations. We anticipate utilizing General Electric 2.72 and 2.32 megawatt turbines. The turbine height is measured from the base of the tower to the tip of the upright blade. The turbine height measures approximately 485.6 feet for the 2.72 megawatt turbines and 452.7 feet for the 2.32 megawatt turbines. We've executed a 30-year power purchase power agreement with Basin Electric Power Cooperative for the purchase of the wind project's output. The transmission project is a 345 kilovolt, 41 mile long electrical transmission line located in Burke County, which is approximately 23 miles, and Montrail County, which is approximately 18 miles. The transmission line originates at the wind project's proposed collection substation located in Burke County and terminates at an interconnection with Basin Electric Tandy substation located in Montrail County.
And are you familiar with the project's applications and supporting materials that have been marked as exhibits 1 through 21?
I am.
And did you submit pre-filed testimony to the commission?
Yes, my pre-filed testimony was submitted to the commission on April 1st.
And it was submitted in both dockets, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And your pre-filed testimony is marked as Exhibit 6. Do you have a copy of Exhibit 6 before you?
Yes, I do.
Is Exhibit 6 the correct copy of your April 1st pre-filed testimony?
Yes.
And is it a true and accurate representation of what your testimony would be if you were to give it orally to the commission?
Yes, however, I do have a correction to a specified setback distance referenced in my testimony and in the wind project application. Page 9 of my testimony contains a table that identifies commission and county setbacks applicable to wind projects. The setback distance pertaining to the commission setback from the center line of a county or maintained township roadway should have stated 609.1 feet instead of 560.6 feet. Similarly, this correction also applies to a setback table 3-5 located on page 3-6 of the wind project application exhibit 1.
Thank you. And were applications for prior versions of the projects previously submitted to the commission?
Yes, applications for the Burke Wind Project and the Burke Wind 345 kilovolt transmission projects were previously submitted to the commission by Burke Wind LLC in 2018 in case numbers PU-18-302 and PU-18-344. I was the project manager for the prior Burke projects. I also would draw your attention to exhibit number 16, which shows a comparison to the Northern Divide Wind Project and the prior Burke Wind Project. In June 2019, the commission denied the Burke Wind Projects due to environmental related concerns associated with the Burke Wind Project's location. Immediately thereafter, Northern Divide Wind began working to revise the projects to address concerns expressed by the commission and other stakeholders.
And can you please briefly highlight the main differences between the Burke Wind Project and the Northern Divide Wind Project?
Yes, the wind project shifted area further west into areas deemed less environmentally sensitive by the North Dakota Game and Fish and reduced the wind project acreage by approximately 52%. We eliminated 3 and relocated over half of the prior 81 wind turbine locations and sited all turbines outside of unbroken grasslands. The transmission line project remains largely similar, however, extended the route by 4 miles to accommodate revisions to the wind project.
And in developing the wind project, has Northern Divide Wind addressed stakeholder concerns that were expressed regarding the prior Burke Wind Project?
Yes, Northern Divide Wind worked closely with the North Dakota Game and Fish to revise the wind project's location and to revise the location of numerous wind turbines. By shifting the wind project further west, Northern Divide Wind was able to move the wind project further from environmentally sensitive areas and further from the townships within Burke County that had previously expressed concerns with Burke Wind Project.
And what is Northern Divide Wind's proposed timeline for construction and operations of the project?
Construction is expected to begin in May or June of 2020 with a commercial operation date of December 2020.
And can you please briefly describe the economic benefits of the project?
Yes, the project will have positive economic impacts for the local population, including lease and royalty payments for participating landowners, new employment opportunities and property and sales taxes. Based on estimated wind revenue by the township projections from the county, the projects are estimated to provide approximately $30 million in tax revenues to Burke and Montreal counties over 30 years. These revenues will also benefit the local economy as this money is reinvested in local goods and services. During the multi-year period that we spent developing the project, Northern Divide Wind hired local environmental and cultural resource consultants to perform the surveys and studies necessary to site the project. We have also undertaken a number of efforts during the project's development to support and engage with the local community and educational organizations, including through donations to local schools, youth organizations, extracurricular programs, sports teams, county-sponsored events and programs, and various county departments such as local volunteer and emergency responders. The projects are expected to create 200 to 300 construction jobs at the peak of construction. Northern Divide Wind has selected our engineering procurement construction contractors, which will hire locally skilled and non-skilled labor first from Burke and Montreal counties, and then from other areas in North Dakota. Additionally, the projects will also create 5 to 7 permanent full-time operations and maintenance jobs.
Thank you. And in your opinion, will the project's location and operation produce minimal adverse impacts while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion?
Yes.
And does this conclude your direct test?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Schmidt, did you have any questions for Mr. Cameron?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Cameron.
Good morning.
You testified that you are the senior project manager for this project, correct?
That is correct.
And during your direct testimony, you indicated that Northern Divide Wind is a wholly owned indirect subsidiary of NextEra Energy. Can you just explain what that means?
Yeah, so Northern Divide Wind is a company that is created to own and operate the assets on this project.
And it falls under the umbrella of NextEra, is that correct?
That is correct.
So who actually owns this project?
Northern Divide Wind LLC is the owner of the project.
Now, in your pre-filed testimony and also on page 1-1 of Exhibit 1, which is the wind project application, it indicates that this wind project will consist of up to 74 turbines. But when we look at page 1-2, of the wind project application indicates that there's 78 turbines in the project area. Can you just explain this? I want to make sure we're clear on what this project proposal actually is.
Yeah, so the project has 74 primary turbines and 4 alternate turbine locations. And we have those 4 alternate turbine locations to help with siting flexibility. The project will only construct 74 total wind turbines out of the 78 that are shown.
So there are no circumstances where more than 74 turbines will be built, is that correct? Are there any circumstances where less than 74 turbines would be constructed?
Not at this time. The turbine technology that I mentioned in my testimony, there's 66 GE 2.72 116-90 turbines and 8 GE 2.32 116-80 turbines.
Now, if I'm understanding the application correctly, Northern Divide Wind is seeking approval to put the turbines in the a project area as opposed to the commission directing specific turbine locations. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Can you please turn to page 1-3 of exhibit number 1? And it's another overlay map comparing the present project, proposed project to the Burke Wind project. But this has some different information than the actual exhibit map that I want to go through.
Okay. I have the exhibit.
Okay. Now, when looking at this page 1-3, there's a map with a black outline. Am I correct that that is the project area that Northern Divide Wind is seeking approval to construct the turbines within?
That is correct.
And there's an area that's outlined in green on this map. And am I correct that the area outlined in green was the Burke Wind project that was denied last year?
That is correct.
Now on this map, there are a variety of dots. Some are red, some are yellow, some are green. But am I correct that the red dots indicate where the turbines were going to be placed for the Burke Wind project?
Could you repeat that question, sir?
Sure. There's a variety of dots on this map, and the red dots, or maybe they're pink, it's kind of hard to tell, but the red dots, do those indicate where the proposed turbine locations were for the Burke Wind project?
Yes, those were the previous turbine locations that were not moved from the previous application.
And the yellow dots on this map indicate the proposed location for turbines if the present application is granted. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the yellow dots that have a red center, those indicate turbine locations that are overlapped between the Burke project and this project. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the green dots on this map are the alternate locations that you previously referred to?
That's correct. 4 alternate locations, correct.
Can I have you please flip to Appendix C of Exhibit 1 and turn to Section C6? What I'm looking at is a September 12th, 2019 letter from North Dakota Game and Fish. Can you please let me know when you find it?
I have that, sir. Okay.
Can you turn to the second page of that letter? And it's the very last sentence of the top paragraph. It states, wind energy development has been shown to have detrimental impacts to wildlife within both wetland and prairie habitats. And careful micro-siting within these habitats is crucial in order to minimize impacts. So my question for you is, do we agree that the North Dakota Game and Fish Department indicated concerns about the specific locations of turbines within the wind project area?
Can you repeat that question? I'm sorry.
Sure. Based on the letter from Game and Fish, do we agree that Game and Fish indicated that it has concerns about the specific locations of turbines within the project area?
Could I defer to my colleague, Mr. Jones, for that response during his testimony?
Well, sure, but I guess my question really comes down to what is Northern Divide Wind really asking for here? What's the commission supposed to do when we have Game and Fish saying that micro-siting is important and could change the environmental impacts of this project, but Northern Divide Wind is asking for just the project area to be approved?
We did site turbines off of and move turbines to relocate them off of environmentally sensitive areas.
So what would possibly cause Northern Divide Wind to move any of the turbines from the locations depicted in the map that we just discussed?
What was the question again?
What would cause Northern Divide Wind to move any of the turbines from where they are depicted in the map that we discussed on page 1-3 of Exhibit 1?
We did move those. Look, are you talking about from the previous location or the?
I'm talking about the yellow dots. The yellow dots, which signify where the turbines for this proposed project would be located. And my question is, what would cause Northern Divide Wind to move any of those yellow dots from that map?
Nothing. I'm sorry. Now I understand the question.
So what would be the reason why, or is there any reason why Northern Divide Wind would move the actual turbine location from where those yellow dots are on that map?
I'm not really understanding the question, Mr. Smith. Sorry.
You've identified specific turbine areas in the project area for the commission's, I guess, consideration with this application, right?
Correct.
And you're asking for the commission to approve an entire area and not specifically micro site turbines, correct?
We did microsite these turbine locations as they are depicted on the map.
Is there anything that would cause Northern Divide Wind to move the turbines from where they're indicated on the yellow dots in that map between now and the date of construction?
There's no plan to move turbines at this point.
Okay. Now on page 1-9 of the wind application, which is Exhibit 1 again, it's indicated that this project will have a nameplate gross capacity of approximately 200 megawatts with a net capacity factor of 47.8%. Can you just explain to me what the net capacity factor of 47.8% means?
Yes, the net capacity factor is based on a 24-hour period of wind that is calculated based on wind turbine measurement devices that we currently have installed out on the project that is gathering data over a period of time. So essentially it's going to have an output, the capacity factor in a 24-hour period of 47.9%. The actual nameplate rate, I'm sorry.
So is it 47.8% of 200 megawatts is what the actual output is expected to be?
The actual output is 198.08 megawatts, which would be the nameplate rating.
So what does the net capacity factor mean? I guess that's kind of what I'm getting at.
It's the operational output of the total project.
Is that, I guess, above the industry standard, below the industry standard? How does that match up to what you generally see in the industry for a net capacity factor?
That's somewhat, in this part of North Dakota, it's a pretty average capacity factor that we've seen.
I guess that kind of segues into my next line of questioning, but why does Northern Divide Wind find this location so desirable?
Well, there's four considerations that we do on a wind project that meets criteria. We have landowner interest, which we had a very good landowner interest in this part. We had interconnection capabilities within the area to support the basin needs for their needs in the Bakken. And that's why it was a good location for us to.
Has Northern Divide Wind considered other locations for this project in North Dakota?
No, not this project was specifically for this project. This location was specifically for this project.
Now, am I correct that if the wind project is constructed, the Northern Divide Wind will also need to construct a transmission line to transport the electricity from the wind project to the Tandy substation?
That's correct.
And is the transmission line wholly dependent on the wind project?
Yes.
So if the wind project isn't built, the transmission line application would be moot. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So once the electricity gets to the Tandy substation, where does it go?
It goes into the SPP. It's an SPP interconnection, which is Southwest Power Pool. My understanding is that it supports the basin needs for the power requirements in the part of North Dakota.
So some of the energy will at least go to North Dakota citizens, or it's expected to?
That's my understanding.
Okay, can I have you go to exhibit number 2, which is the transmission line application, and go to the figures tab and look at figure 1-1.
Okay, I have that.
Okay, and is this a map of the transmission line, or the proposed transmission line?
Yes, that's correct.
So the red line is the actual route that the transmission line would follow, is that correct?
That is correct.
And the black area on there indicates a study corridor, which I presume is what was studied as a result of identifying this to be an okay place to put a transmission line. Is that correct?
Correct.
So if I'm looking at this map, I can assume that Northern Divide Wind is proposing to construct the transmission line along the location that's delineated in red on this map. Is that fair?
Correct.
Have all the landowners who own property where the transmission line will be constructed signed leases, except for the North Dakota Department of Trust Lands? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Am I correct that the transmission line will only come within 500 feet of one occupied residence along the proposed route?
That is correct.
And did Northern Divide Wind secure a waiver from that landowner?
Yes, we do have a waiver from that landowner.
And I presume a bunch of the environmental impact questions relating to both the transmission line and the wind project will be better suited for another witness. Is that fair to say?
That is correct.
Okay. I do have a couple more questions for you that relate to the construction and the operation of this project. And in your direct testimony, you touched on this a little bit too. but I understand that Northern Divide Wind will hire a third-party contractor to construct both the wind and the transmission project. Is that correct?
Correct.
What amount of oversight will Northern Divide Wind have over this third-party contractor?
I mean, I can answer that at a very high level or defer it to Sean Harrington because he's our senior director of engineering and construction, but I can answer it. We'll have a staff of construction management folks on site during the construction of the project. And like I said, I defer to Sean Harrington for more specific details during his testimony.
And would Sean be able to answer some questions with respect to how some of the proposed environmental mitigation, issues that are raised in the application will be implemented as well?
Mr. Jones is our environmental subject matter expert who will be able to answer those specific questions.
Now, after the project becomes operational, I understand there'll be 5 to 7 full-time employees who operate and maintain it. Is that correct?
Correct.
And I think the application refers to them as O&M staff. Is that who you're referring to with the 5 to 7 individuals? Is that the O&M staff?
Correct.
And they will work on the site of the wind project, correct?
That is correct. We will construct an O&M facility where they will be working out of, which is right on the project site.
And will those be Northern Divide Wind employees, or who will be their employer?
I'd have to check on that for you and get back to you, sir.
Now, I also understand there's a remote means of controlling this project as well, correct?
That is correct.
And that's through the SCADA system, S-C-A-D-A?
That is correct.
Where does the remote monitoring occur? Where's the headquarters for that?
Well, there's 2 points of O&M data that comes in. It comes in at the O&M facility, and it also comes to our facility that's located in our Juno Beach headquarters.
So will the primary means of monitoring the project be remote, or will it be on site?
It has both capabilities to do both on site and remotely 24/7 from our diagnostic center located in Juno Beach, Florida.
Now, I understand that there's 2 different types of turbines that are going to be used on this project, the GE 2.72 and the GE 2.32. Is that correct?
Yes, the 2.72s, 11690s, and the 2.32, 11680s. That's correct.
And is it fair to say that the 2.72 is it bigger?
Yes.
Is the actual physical footprint of both the 2.72 and the 2.32 the same?
Yes. It's just the rotor diameter that the hub height is a little different. The 2.72 has a 90-meter hub height, and the 2.32 has an 80-meter hub height.
Now, you discussed in your direct testimony and also in your pre-filed testimony some of the economic benefits to the counties where this project is proposed. And I know in the application it indicates that the wind project will provide over $30 million in tax revenue to Burke County. And I guess I'm just curious, how was that number calculated?
That number was calculated based on provided by the Burke County that calculated the number of turbines and the how much tax they would, generate based on the townships.
So it was a number that you got from the county, not a number that Northern Divide Wind.
That is correct.
I also understand that Northern Divide Wind entered into a 30-year purchase power agreement with Basin Electric.
That is correct.
And I also see at least some reference in the application that the useful life of the wind project is anticipated to be 30 years. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Is that just a coincidence that the purchase power agreement and the useful life of the project are both 30 years, or is that exactly how long a wind farm's useful life is under any circumstances?
Well, the life of the wind farm could be extended with an upgrade based on new turbine technology that could come available. We've done that with several of our operating facilities in North Dakota already, where we upgraded it to the newer technology, which extends the life even further. So there is this possibility.
What determines when the wind project, I guess, exhausts its useful life?
I'm not sure.
Well, you said you can upgrade some turbines and
correct.
Some you don't, right?
Some projects could extend their life expectancy by upgrading to newer technology. That is correct.
So what's the tipping factor to determine whether you're going to extend the useful life or not extend the useful life?
Well, there's various factors. If there's turbine technology upgrades available and that we could extend the life of it and then also extend the life of the purchase power agreement further beyond 30 years, then we would do that.
But once the useful life of the project has, I guess, expired or passed, does Northern Divide Wind have a plan for decommissioning this project?
Yes. We have to file prior to operations of the project. We will have to file a decommissioning plan with the commission.
And I guess I'm just looking for very broad strokes on this question, but is the goal essentially to return the landscape to its original state once the decommissioning process is completed?
That is correct.
Have you been involved in any decommissioning of wind projects in your experience?
I have not.
One thing I did note when going through the documents that the company provided is that Northern Divide Wind entered into an agreement with North Dakota Game and Fish, and as part of that agreement, Northern Divide committed to no further development of this project and no further development in the Missouri Coteau. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why?
It was part of our commitment to North Dakota Game and Fish.
So I guess my question, and I'm looking for the company's position on this, is the Missouri Coteau is I think we know it's got some environmental benefit to North Dakota and to wildlife and things like that. So why is it okay to put just one wind project here, but no more?
I'm going to defer to my colleague, Mr. Jones, on further details with that.
I think the rest of my questions will be best addressed by another witness. I thank you for your time this morning, Mr. Cameron.
Thank you.
Mr. Lean, did you have any questions for Mr. Cameron? Jerry?
Jerry Lean, are you there?
We're checking on Mr. Lean. While we do that, Mr. Pranis, did you have any questions for Mr. Cameron?
I do, Your Honor. Let me turn my camera on. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mr. Cameron. So questions about the construction process and the construction workforce, are those best addressed to you?
Those would be best addressed to my colleague, Mr. Sean Harrington.
Okay. All right. Well, then I think I'll defer those questions. Are there any aspects of this in terms of the applications and the description of the construction process and the application that I should be asking you, or it sounds like construction is really Mr. Harrington's area? Primarily.
That is correct. He's our senior director of engineering and construction and can certainly answer those questions for you.
Thank you, sir. In that case, no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Pranis. I'll just note that Mr. Lean does not have any questions for Mr. Cameron. Commissioner Fedorchak, do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cameron. Just a couple follow-up questions here based on your testimony. First of all, how would you characterize the local permitting and the conversations held at the local level during your receival of the conditional use permit, both at the Planning and Zoning Board, where there was a 4-2 vote, and then at the County Commission level, where I see they approved it with a 3-0 vote?
Yes, Commissioner. After the commission decision in June of 2019 on the denial of the Burke project, we met with the planning and zoning. We met with Burke County to discuss relocating the turbines from the environmentally and sensitive areas that were brought up during the hearing. We also tried to meet with some of the other stakeholders in the project as well. And we said that we were going to move the project that would hopefully satisfy all of the stakeholders. We then submitted an application for a revised project location in September of 2019. And we went through a couple of public hearings, and it was recommended by the Burke County Planning and Zoning at a 4-2 vote to recommend approval to the County Commission. And that approval was a 3-0 vote by the Burke County Commission.
Okay. The planning and zoning level, what were the objections from the folks who voted against it?
I don't know if there was a specific reason for not recommended approval. I'd have to go back into my notes specifically if I can find it, but it was, I don't think there was anything specifically referenced.
So would your characterization be mostly that some people just didn't want wind development in their area?
That's fair.
All righty. But you did end up getting the approvals last fall from the County Commission and a 3-0 vote.
That is correct.
All right. Then I wanted to talk about the status of your interconnection agreement. I've heard you say or allude to having that interconnection agreement, but then in the pre-filed testimony, you state that Northern Divide expects to execute a generation agreement, interconnection agreement with SPP in the third quarter of 2020. So do you have the interconnection currently or not?
Commissioner, no, we don't. And if I said that, that was not an accurate statement. the current status of the interconnection agreement with SPP, and Basin is the transmission owner, by the way. It's going through the DISA's phase now. We should expect the GIA in the third quarter of 2020, an executable GIA.
Okay. Do you still have studies that they are conducting, and do you know the cost of the interconnection at this point?
We do have an estimated cost of the interconnection facilities. And it's going through SPP had to perform a restudy because there were some other two positions that had dropped out. So every time in SPP, a queue position drops out or withdraws, it has to go through a restudy process. I would also like to add that Basin Electric has completed all of the network upgrades in the Tandy substation for us to connect into this project. Those upgrades are completed.
Okay, so the only other upgrades would be if there was some other trigger someplace else in the SPP system, or MISO for that matter, that this project would...
Some type of affected system study, which we're not anticipating at this time.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your confidence, but those affected system studies have been coming back with some significant costs. What makes you think this one will be different?
We've had extensive conversations. I mean, Basin Electric is a transmission owner. We've had some recent conversations with Basin and SPP, and I'm somewhat comfortable that the upgrades are not going to be as extreme as some of the other projects that were in MISO late last year.
Okay. Is it possible that those costs could come in higher than expected, and that would change the economics of this project?
It's possible.
Not real likely, in your opinion?
Not likely, in my opinion, as of today. That's correct.
Okay. All right. I want to talk next about the FAA approval. So you've been in touch with the FAA. What about the Minot Air Force Base? Do they have any facilities in this area that they oversee or are involved in?
So, no, Northern Dubai Wind does not have any issues or concerns with the turbines with Minot Air Force Base or the Department of Defense or launch facilities. Northern Dubai Wind conducted an obstruction evaluation, airport airspace analysis, back in May of 2018. And we had, at that time, we had identified about 108 square miles on the project boundary when it was the 300 megawatt project boundary. We received all of the FAA determinations of no hazard for the turbine locations in their current location. And there are no issues with any Department of Defense missile or missile silo launch facilities. And we have that notification from the Military Aviation and Installation Siting Clearinghouse.
Very good. Then let's talk about the light mitigating technology. You say in your testimony that you own all the equipment, you have the radar, and all the equipment to install the FAA-approved aircraft lighting ADLS on the system, correct? You have all the equipment.
That is correct, Commissioner. The vendor that we purchased the ADLS has that in their facility at their facility in the United States.
Okay, very good. And but you have not received FAA approval for the light plan yet?
Not for the ADLS location, that is correct. All the other turbine locations have received their FAA approval. We expect to receive the ADLS location determination of no hazard prior to construction.
What's different about the ADLS versus the, so did you get a traditional lighting plan first? Is that what you said has been approved for each of the towers?
That is correct.
Okay, and you'll be using that during construction?
That is correct.
And you don't...
The turbines are erected to their full height. There's a temporary light that has to go on for FAA requirements. And then once we have the facility constructed and operational and back feed power, we will activate the ADLS system to operate after commercial operation.
Okay, very good. And you don't expect any delays in receiving that approval from the FAA for the ADLS?
No, we don't, Commissioner.
Okay. All right. I'd encourage you to keep checking with them just because everything is different with this COVID. All right. I think that concludes my questions for you, Mr. Cameron. The rest, I think, are for your experts, other experts on some of the biological and sound and flicker and those sorts of things. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Crotchis, do you have any questions?
I do. Thank you, Your Honor. On the 5 to 7 full-time staff for operation maintenance, I believe the application indicates that those jobs will be created. They're not shared with an existing facility in the region.
They are solely going to be working on Northern Dubai Wind. That's correct, Commissioner. They are not shared with another facility.
On the landowner easements, and you may have answered this already, but are those fully obtained?
I'm sorry, what was the question, sir?
Landowner easements, are those fully obtained?
Yes, they are for both the wind farm and the transmission line. With the exception on the transmission line, we've negotiated an agreement with the North Dakota Trust Land, but we will not execute that agreement until a final order is issued.
Okay. In terms of the landowner easements, do those match up? Are they 30 years as well, or are they beyond the 30-year period?
The landowner agreements are, I believe, we modified the agreement from a 90-year lease to somewhat of a 50-year term.
Okay, and the reason for shortening that?
During our outreach with some of the landowners, they were somewhat concerned with a 90-year lease. That's a standard language in our land agreements, but it's up for modification if need be.
Okay. Were the landowners that had some of the turbine locations in the previous footprint, have they been released?
Yes, we have released the prior turbine locations in the prior 200 megawatt boundary.
Are the turbines entirely on private land?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know what the oil well count is within the footprint? Are there any?
Commissioner, I have to get back with you on that. I don't know that off the top of my head.
Okay. And then I think the biggest question, and Mr. Schmidt alluded to this, or actually had the same line of questioning. And at the beginning of the application, you are asking for flexibility in terms of potentially moving turbines. Would that be isolated in nature if that does occur?
We don't plan on moving any turbine locations from their present location.
Okay, but you are asking for flexibility if the need arises?
We have 4 alternate locations that are already part of the application. So if we're not planning on moving any of them currently.
Okay, so in terms of working with North Dakota Game and Fish, that was based on the stated locations, including the alternate locations.
That is correct.
Okay, and this might, I'm assuming this is a question for another witness in terms of the 2-acre parcels. And I think what is described as an offset package, which includes, yes, that's... Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, sir. Yeah, that would be for my colleague, Mr. Jones.
Okay, I will wait on that. And then I believe the question in terms of workers would be for Mr. Harrington, workforce.
That is correct.
I have no other questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman, do you have any questions?
Yes, Your Honor. The first one, most of our siting cases include an estimated cost of the project. And if that's in here, I missed it. Is that something that you've made public?
I believe it was in my pre-filed testimony, Commissioner.
So what is it?
I'm sorry. It's approximately $300 million for the wind farm and approximately $30 million for the transmission line.
And does that include the voluntary mitigation efforts?
Yes.
And does it include your whatever the estimate is of the interconnection costs?
Yes, it does.
So then to explore that a little further, somewhere, and I didn't mark the page, but in Exhibit 1, there was a relatively quick time frame to start construction with plans of being completed. But then in your response to Commissioner Fedorchak's questions, you indicated that the current study by SPP could be some months out yet. Is the plan to invest big chunks of $330 million before you have the final interconnection agreement and the final cost something you would do, or is the construction on hold until that's finalized?
No, Commissioner, this is somewhat typical that what we do, that sometimes we start construction prior to executing a generator interconnect agreement with either SPP or MISO, knowing that we're comfortable with the interconnection, final interconnection cost based on our conversations with both SPP and Basin Electric. So we would still start construction. We anticipate having the executable GIA in July of this year. But to answer your question, we would not postpone construction start.
And if for some reason the interconnection cost was significantly higher than what you expect, is that NextEra's burden or Basin Electric's burden?
That would be NextEra's burden.
Okay. In some other wind farm cases, there's been discussion of what's been called, and I think it's a more generic term, but a cold weather package that would allow the system to operate under more extreme cold temperatures. Is that something that's going to be part of this project?
Yes, Commissioner, it is. We are installing a cold weather package on every turbine location here.
What's the, on these turbines, what's the wind speed at which they need to have brakes applied or be shut down?
I'd have to get back to you on that response. That's an operational question. I'd have to look at the GE specifications if I could get back to you with that answer.
Yes, sir, that would be fine. I'm still in exhibit one, but in appendix C, there's a letter from the North Dakota aviation people, and they say, due to the proximity of Tioga Municipal Airport, we recommend you file an airspace case to the FAA. Has that been done?
I'm just looking for the letter, sir. Just one moment. If they're referring to the FAA determination of no hazard, yes, these have been all completed.
Okay, thank you. And then continuing in Appendix C as in Charlie. A later page, there's a letter from the North Dakota Geological Survey from August 30th of last year, and it mentions seven abandoned mine land locations located just north of White Earth, North Dakota. Are you familiar with those locations and recall that letter?
Yeah, there are no abandoned mines in the current project boundary. I think that was just a notification that there was some in the area, but there is none in our project boundary.
Neither in the project boundary nor in the transmission line right away?
Correct.
And in exhibit two, just give me a second to figure out where it was though. I stand corrected in the supplemental information that was filed in Appendix D, if you could go to that. There's a setback waiver that's filed there.
Yes, sir, I have it.
So is that the location that I see in on the maps, very near the very end of the transmission line?
Yes, sir, that's correct. It's near the Tandy substation where we interconnect into.
Right, to the land underneath.
Mr. Yeah. Reamer, Mike.
Okay, that's the corresponding person then, huh?
Correct.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think my other questions are for other witnesses.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Fury, did you have any redirect for Mr. Cameron?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Mr. Cameron, just want to address a few of the topics that were previously discussed. With respect to the authorization in here, let me turn on my webcam. That would likely be helpful. There we go. So with respect to the authorization that Northern Divide Wind speaks with respect to the wind facility, I'm going to have you turn to page 1-3 in the wind application, which is marked as Exhibit 1.
Okay, I have that.
And the project boundary is outlined in black, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And you're seeking authorization from the commission for a certificate of site compatibility for that project boundary, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And as part of that authorization, that includes the specific locations of turbines that are identified on this map.
That is correct.
Okay. And so there's been discussion about requesting the flexibility to site turbines in locations that are different than what's identified on that map. You've indicated that you propose to construct 74 turbines in the identified locations. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then there's an additional 4 alternate locations, correct?
That is correct.
And so hypothetically, if you were to construct turbines in locations that were not identified on this map, is it your testimony today that you would then go back to the commission to seek authorization to site turbines and locations that are different than what's been identified on this map?
That is correct.
Okay. And you testified that you don't anticipate needing to do that because as the project's been designed, it accounts for or includes those 4 alternate turbine locations.
That is correct.
Okay. And so with respect to your county CUP, has that CUP been issued for just a general project area, or is that CUP issued for specific turbine locations?
CUP was issued for project-specific locations indicated on that map.
So if you were to change those locations, in addition to seeking authorization from the commission to do so, you would have to go back to the county as well, correct? I'm sorry, can you say that again? You cut out, Mr. Cameron.
That is correct.
Okay. And is it your testimony today that you commit to doing that if that, in fact, is the case, but as far as you know, you don't anticipate needing to do so?
That is correct.
Okay. And with respect to the county CUP on this project, when the county issued its revised CUP, did it make a finding that Northern Divide Wind had complied with Burke County's zoning ordinances?
That is correct.
And can you please describe the original CUP that was issued for the 200 megawatt Burke Wind project?
Can you repeat the question, please?
Yes, Mr. Cameron. So you had an initial CUP that was issued by Burke County for the Burke Wind project, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so that CUP covered a larger area than the current proposed project, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And so when you went back to Burke County to get a revised CUP for the revised Northern Divide Wind project, were there any changes that were made to the CUP. Does the CUP still include and encompass areas that are located within the prior 200 Burke Wind project?
The original conditional use permit that was issued by Burke County was for the 300 megawatt project. And I don't recall what the number of turbines were, but they were significantly more than 74 turbine locations.
Mr. Cameron, I'm just going to draw your attention to the wind project comparison map. And that is Exhibit 16. So your CUP covered, can you identify what area on this map?
The original 300 megawatt CUP was the purple area, shaded area on that Exhibit 16 map.
Okay. And then did you work with the county to address the revised proposed 200 megawatt project that's outlined in orange? Were there any changes that needed to be made to that original CUP?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So essentially what my question is Northern Divide Wind has redesigned the project. And as a part of that, you went to Burke County to obtain a revised CUP. Does the current CUP that you hold for the Northern Divide Wind project, does that still include the lands that are identified in Exhibit 16 being portions that are outlined in orange and purple that extend outside of your existing project boundary? So does it authorize you to construct in areas that are outside of your current proposed project boundary?
No, it does not. We released all of those turbine locations and the land associated with those turbine locations in that previous conditional use permit.
So all of the lands associated with and turbine locations associated with the Burke Wind 300 megawatt project and then the 200 megawatt project that extend outside of the current boundary have been released from the CUP?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. So Mr. Cameron, after the Burke Wind project was denied by the commission, did Northern Divide Wind work with the wildlife agencies on various siting considerations to relocate turbines?
Yes, we did.
And so you took, you evaluated these considerations in your micro siting and relocation of turbines. Is that your testimony?
Correct.
Okay. Correct. And I would have you turn, one second here, we've got a lot of material. I would have you turn to Exhibit 13, and that is the March 17th, 2020 letter from North Dakota Game and Fish.
Okay, I have that.
Can you please turn to the second page of that letter?
Okay.
The Game and Fish states that Northern Divide Wind has also committed to avoid future wind development in the Northern Missouri Coteau. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And I just wanted to clarify for the record, you previously testified that Northern Divide Wind committed to avoid future development within the Missouri Coteau, but your commitment relates to the Northern Missouri Coteau. And there is a difference there, so those are different geological regions, I should say, correct? Okay. And with respect to decommissioning, you briefly touched on the topic earlier. You indicated that Northern Divide Winds will file a decommissioning plan prior to operations of the facility. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so in addition to that, Northern Divide Winds will also provide the commission with a financial assurance prior to starting construction?
Yes. A financial assurance of equals to 5% of the estimated cost of the construction will be filed with the PSC.
And then does Northern Divide Wind intend to provide a supplement financial assurance prior to operation of the facility consistent with PSC rules and regulations?
That is correct.
And in addition to being bound by the commission's decommissioning rules and regulations, do you have any commitments to landowners with respect to decommissioning obligations?
Yes, there's a financial, it's in their land easement agreement that specifically states that.
Thank you. No further questions.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Cameron before we take a break?
Judge, I do have another question.
All right, go ahead, Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Mr. Cameron, how many non-participating landowners exist within the project boundary?
All landowners within the project boundary are participating.
Well, I mean, they're excluded, but they're within the outside boundary. There's pockets of some landmass that's surrounded by the project. I'm looking at figure 1-5 in exhibit 1.
Figure 1-5. Just let me pull that up.
Sure.
Okay.
So those white squares that are kind of within the green, those are non-participating, I'm assuming?
That is correct, Commissioner.
Okay. So what is the definition of a participating landowner? What do they have to do to participate?
Just sign a participation agreement.
And do all of them host turbines?
All of the ones on this exhibit that are shaded in green, or the light green, I guess is the color, is a participating landowner that has infrastructure. I think there was a couple that did not have infrastructure on their property that remained a participating landowner because they had an agreement signed up in the previous boundary.
If they didn't get, did the company make it available to landowners that were landlocked, you know, in the middle of the project, could they participate without hosting a turbine and get some payment?
Yes, we've had a few of those landowners that have signed up as participating without a turbine on their property. Yes.
So would it be accurate to assume that the ones that aren't green within in the middle of this boundary chose not to? They were offered and chose not to?
That is correct, Commissioner. They were offered and chose not to be a participant in the project boundary.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Are there other questions?
I have an answer to Commissioner Process's question about active oil wells in the project boundary. I have that answer for you, sir.
Go ahead, Mr. Cameron.
There are 3 active oil and gas wells in the wind farm area and 12 active oil and gas well pads within the T-line study corridor.
Are there other questions for Mr. Cameron?
Your Honor, I do, but I don't want to go ahead of Chairman Crashes.
Commissioner Karasius, do you have any other questions?
I don't have any other questions at this time.
All right. Go ahead, Commissioner Chrisman.
Okay, two, and I think one of them I asked you before and you answered and I just forgot to write it down or didn't. Is there a speed at which these turbines have the brakes applied or are shut down?
I think that was a follow-up answer that I needed to supply you, Commissioner.
Oh, okay. That's why I didn't write it down. And then does this project qualify for production tax credits?
It does.
100%?
Yes.
And what is the amount of the PTCs now per kilowatt or a megawatt hour?
It's 2.5 cents per kW hour.
2.5? Did you say 2.5?
So 2.5 cents per kW hour.
Okay, thank you. And I have no other questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Schmidt, did you have any other questions?
No, Your Honor, thanks.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We will reconvene at 11:30. All right. I think we have everybody back, so we will continue. Ms. Fury, did you want to call your next witness?
Yes, Your Honor. At this time, we call Mr. Sean Harrington.
Mr. Harrington, before you testify today, I am required by law to advise you on the maximum penalty for perjury in the state of North Dakota. It's a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Do you understand what perjury is?
I do.
And being advised on the potential penalties for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this case today?
I do.
Thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Fury.
Thank you. Mr. Harrington, can you please introduce yourself to the commission?
Good morning, everyone. First, I'd like to take some time to appreciate the opportunity to talk to everyone. I hope everyone's safe and healthy during this challenging time. My name is Sean Harrington. I'm the Senior Director of Construction with NextEra Energy and the construction direction for Northern Divide, the proposed wind and transmission projects we're talking today. So my role is to manage a team that's responsible for execution for all new and wind repower projects for NextEra Energy, which includes Northern Divide Wind. My team manages the design that's procured from engineers of record in order to produce a safe, high quality, and cost effective design for all our wind projects. Those designs are then used to go out to the market and competitively bid to an EPC, an engineer procurement construction company, who provides all the labor and the direct equipment to construct the project. And my team really is on site to provide assurance and management of the owner supplied material and also the EPCs ensure that they produce a quality build to the NextEra design. Next question.
And can you please just briefly discuss your educational and professional background?
Yeah, so I received my engineering degree from Georgia Tech. I've been in the energy industry for the past 20 years. I started my career as a combined cycle engineer, which is typically more traditional gas turbine power plants with General Electric. And I was a design engineer for a few years, and then I went into the field for project management. I've been doing construction and maintenance on energy projects in the United States, Europe, and Africa for GE for about 10 years. And then I had an opportunity to move to a maintenance manager position with Florida Power and Light, which is a subsidiary of NextEra, and in 2010. And I was only in that position for about a year, and I had an opportunity to run the wind maintenance team responsible for all the major maintenance gearbox, main shaft replacements throughout the country for NextEra in 2011. and ran that group for 3 years, and moved over to the Senior Director of Engineering for all ENC related items in 2014. And then an opportunity to take over Senior Director of Construction in 2016. So I've been overseeing wind construction for the past 4 years. My team has built over 8 gigawatts of wind and repower throughout the country.
Thank you. And can you please briefly describe the process that Northern Divide Wind utilized to select its EPC contractors?
Sure. So Northern Divide solicits bids from a list of EPCs, and we consider EPCs based off of the execution plan that they develop based off of the design that we give them. And we look for, you know, quality management consideration, safety procedures, and cost competitiveness.
And so what factors did Northern Divide Wind use to evaluate EPC contractors?
So first and foremost, we always look for safety. Safety is a value here in NextEra. And on top of that, included in safety, we're always looking for what's the ability for the contractors to attain labor. That's going to meet what the schedule we need in order to get the product online and take full advantage of the PTCs and meet the commitments of our customers. And in doing so, also perform, a high quality standard and a cost competitiveness.
And are any of the factors that you've just identified weighted more heavily than others in EPC contractor evaluation?
No, we require our contractors to meet all those criteria, and they're all considered equally during the selection process.
And will Northern Divide Wind coordinate with its EPC contractors to implement safety procedures and to monitor compliance?
Yes. For skilled laborers, Northern Divide Wind requires its EPCs to hire skilled laborers, you know, appropriate for the job. And that comes with certifications for their respective positions, like OSHA crane training, required hours, high and medium voltage training for things like switching or grounds for pad mount transformers. And of course, tower rescue for anyone that's going to be a wind tower climber. Additionally, EPCs are required to do an onboarding safety training for all workers. And that goes even further for new employees. We have a process called an orange hat process, or new employee, where workers are identified that are new to the wind industry, and they have to show competence in order to remove those hats, so people know that these people are newer to the task. We also do tailboards or job hazard awareness meetings. If you're not familiar with that process, we do a rundown of all the possible risks and hazards that can happen on a task, and make sure that the team reviews those, discuss possible mitigations, so everyone's aware of what the risk is before they start that task. So my team, my staff, the Northern Divide staff, are responsible for making sure that these policies and procedures are followed throughout the construction process. They perform spot checks, making sure that the quality assurance program that the EPCs have developed are being followed, making sure that they're being complete to our satisfaction, and we log those in our work management system. They also attend several of the JHAs or tail boards to make sure that they're considering all the risks and hazards while they're performing those tail boards. And on top of that, we've got plan of the days and indicators that we use to measure performance.
Thank you. And have the safety procedures and monitoring measures that you just described been utilized by other NextEra subsidiaries on North Dakota projects with success?
Yeah, we've done numerous projects in North Dakota, both in the past few years and historically. And these procedures have been used for the past 10 years, And we've also, they've been automated for in our work management system for the past 5 years.
And will Northern Divide Wind utilize labor from around the project area to construct the project?
Yeah, we always make a commitment for our EPCs to hire local labor. It's a benefit to everyone that local labor is used. It's a cost benefit for the project and for the EPCs for not having to spend money on per diem or travel expenses. And it's the right thing to do for the community. You know, Northern Divide itself, and you know, the NextEra subsidiary doesn't hire any labor directly until operations. The labor force that we'll see during construction is hired directly by the EPCs. And our EPCs hold a job fair, sometimes one or two, sometimes even three, prior to starting the work to hire as much qualified local labor that's in the area. And our goal is to hire as much as we can within, you know, a daily commute. And then we look regionally and then into the state of North Dakota and eventually outside.
And what approach have other NextEra subsidiary projects in North Dakota used to hire construction workers?
Yeah, similar to what our approach I just mentioned for Northern Divide, our EPC contractor has held job fairs in the past, first to look into hiring as much labor as close to the project as possible. Whatever is not available, we supplement from labor coming off of other sites in the area.
And are there challenges associated with hiring a majority of local labor for project construction?
Yeah, there can be. It really depends on a number of factors. Historically, the market in this area in North Dakota has been highly saturated by oil and gas jobs, which has a limited amount of available local labor at the time that we perform the project. Our wind farms tend to be in more remote areas, and that limits the amount of local labor that's willing to go to these particular areas. And the construction window for wind farms tend to be constrained. We build these wind farms in 6 months. So workers may not be available at that timeline that's needed to get the project done for our commitments.
And how will Northern Divide Wind ensure the health and safety of its contractors and workers?
Yeah, as I mentioned, Northern Divide Wind, NextEra takes safety as a value, you know, priority, I think, is something that you can reduce the impact value, is something that's part of what you do. And our contractors are required to submit a safety plan that you know, reinforces what our commitment to safety is. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, some of the things we do is, you know, job hazard awareness tailboards to identify risks. We also encourage behavior-based safety observations, which employees will or workers will go throughout the sites and record positive and areas for improvement of culture of how people are performing the work and what we can do to improve that. We also have a very strong near miss program, where, you know, an incident may happen that didn't result in any injury, but we think it could have. And we spend this a lot of time and effort digging into those incidents to make sure that they don't become an injury. And in the event that we have, an unfortunate event that we have an injury, we have a very robust root cause analysis process that I'm involved with personally to make sure that we dig into to every incident to make sure it's not repeated. On top of that, there's a number of required training. Specific individuals on the project will are required to have CPR training, lockout, tag out for isolating of equipment for both potential or electrical energy hazards, and skill training, like I had suggested earlier, like OSHA crane training and hot work for welding.
Thank you. And how will Northern Divide Wind manage the health and safety of its contractors and workers and the general public among COVID-19?
Yeah, as you can imagine, this has been top of my mind, I think everyone, and how we continue to perform this work safely. You know, we've got a commitment to not only our employees and contractors, but the people in the communities where this job is happening. And, you know, we've got, we've been working with our EPCs on a number of different precautions. And, you know, similarly in Northern Dubai, we're gonna implement those at this project. So we're gonna be doing, the EPCs will be performing health assessment checks on everyone coming to site each and every day. And one of the big things I think is an advantage to wind is we're gonna be limiting our crew size. A lot of these crews are very far apart. So, you know, they're really only in contact with the small amount of people that they're doing their job in, and a crew that's doing a crane lift on turbine 5 could be, you know, 50 miles away from the next closest crew, and making sure that we don't, you know, increase the possibility of impact by having crews cross-contaminated is a big step. And, you know, on top of that, we're going to be regularly disinfecting all of our common areas. We've got a very strict travel request process where all non-essential personnel will not be traveling to the site. They're actually all requests are gone through me for approval. And, you know, when we can, we're going to be practicing social distancing at all of our sites and reinforcing each day, you know, good personal hygiene practices with our supervisors. We're going to be increasing trash and waste disposal on all the sites. And on top of limiting the crew sizes, we're going to stagger the work to try to, further decrease the amount of people that come into contact with you know, during the day. So, you know, as all of you guys know, this pandemic is a very dynamic process, and we're continuing to monitor information coming from the state and the CDC, and we're adjusting our plan as we get new information.
And does this conclude your direct testimony?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Schmidt, do you have any questions for Mr. Harrington?
I do. Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Harrington.
Morning.
You talked about a lot of different things during your direct testimony as far as the structure with construction goes. I just want to try to simplify this as much as we can so everyone's on the same page. But we have NextEra, which is the parent company of the entire project, right?
Correct.
The Northern Divide Wind, which is a subsidiary of NextEra, but really for all intents and purposes, one and the same. Is that fair to say?
Correct.
Then Northern Divide Wind or NextEra will go out and hire an EPC, which is essentially just a general contractor for the project. Is that fair to say?
Correct.
And then EPC will hire a subcontractors who perform additional work on the project. Is that right?
In some regards, some of the labor is self-supplied by the EPC. Some of it is contracted out.
And does NextEra or Northern Divide Wind have any control over how the EPC allocates its work?
So they submit what their labor plan is, both with their subcontractors, and their subcontractors are approved by NextEra, and how much they intend to self-perform.
This is a question I had for Mr. Cameron, and he directed me to you on it, but after this project becomes operational, there's this 5 to 7 O&M staff members who will be on site. Who will these 5 to 7 O&M staff members be employed by?
So they're employed by a company called OSI, Operating Services Incorporated, which is a subsidiary of NextEra Energy Resources.
So it's all under the O&M people are working under the same ownership umbrella as Northern Divide Wind and NextEra. Is that fair to say?
Correct.
I have just a couple questions with respect to the environmental mitigation measures that are at least talked about in the application and how those are going to be monitored throughout the construction of the project. I'm not going to get into every single mitigation measure, but my overall question is, what amount of control does Northern Divide Wind have over the EPC or its subcontractors to ensure that the environmental mitigation measures are followed?
So a lot of these environmental questions I'm going to defer to Justin Dustin Jones, but I can answer what the construction plan is on all of our sites. So we have an environmental representation by NextEra that manages all environmental issues throughout the site. And we have a consultant that comes in and does quality control to make sure the EPCs are complying with what needs to happen in terms of environmental processes. We also have a NextEra person that's responsible for overseeing all environmental issues on the site.
So Northern Divide Wind or NextEra actually has boots on the ground to make sure that these environmental mitigation measures are being followed during construction. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I don't think I have anything else for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lean, did you have any questions?
Yes, just one. Has an EPC contractor been selected yet?
Yes.
Okay, so can you tell me who that is?
So for the wind farm, it's going to be Blattner Energy.
Okay.
For the transmission line, it will be Brink Construction. And for the substation, it will be Energy Erectors.
Okay, so you're going to have different people doing dirt work on each of the projects then?
That's correct.
So, okay, that's all I had. Thank you.
Mr. Pranis, did you have any questions?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Harrington. And I just want to start out by saying that we really appreciate, we've had a very positive experience in the last year working with NextEra in Minnesota to maximize employment of local workers. And we really appreciate the efforts the company has made and the way that it's stepped up in Minnesota. So just a couple of questions first to the points that you made in your testimony and then some more general questions about construction. Your role is that a national role across all of the U.S. Construction operations in the last, I think, four years?
That's correct.
Okay. So you've been involved in oversight, or your team has overseen projects in North Dakota and Minnesota. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thanks. And you mentioned that there are some minimum qualifications, I think, that NextEra establishes for labor on the construction labor on projects. I just wanted to, if you could give me an overview. I heard a couple specifically, I mean, OSHA, and just who they apply to. Obviously different ones apply differently. Unless there's a document that details all this, maybe if you could quickly give me an overview.
Yeah, so the OSHA crane training, that's obviously required for our crane operators. And the CPR training is usually a requirement for supervisors and foremen. Anyone that's climbing towers is required to do tower rescue and climb safety training. And anyone that's responsible for medium or high voltage work, like switching or putting grounds on Padmont transformers, is required to have high voltage certifications.
Okay, so those would be the key trainings that NextEra requires. Obviously Blattner might have some of its own requirements about quality.
Yes.
Okay,
correct.
That's helpful. And then you mentioned the project was put out to bid for bids. When were those bids originally, when you put it out to bid to multiple EPC bidders, when were those initial proposals received? Was that recent or was that back in the original plan for Burke Wind?
Yeah, so this one, we had the EPCs lined up for Burke Wind. So that was back in 2018. And then those bid proposals were refreshed for Northern Divide in I think August of 19.
And out of curiosity, could you say roughly how many different bids you were looking at for Burke Wind for the new, the refreshed version?
I think we looked at around 10.
Okay. For the, and this is for the EPC to do the erection, the wind turbine part, or are you counting different bid scopes?
Yeah, so that's including some of the substation guys. Well, there's obviously people that bid all three, like Morton, right. Santa Blattner. So for the wind farm piece, I think it was more like five.
Okay. Great. So just wanted to first, if you could just quickly walk me through the components, how would you break down the key components of the construction project for the wind farm specifically?
Sure. So, we typically have a collection supervisor that is making sure that everyone that's doing collection, for those who don't know, collection is the electrical cable that goes from the Padmont transformer at the bottom of the turbine back to the collector sub in the substation. And we have a civil portion where one of my personnel is focused on civil and environmental. There is a substation supervisor. There is a transmission line supervisor, and then we'll have a logistics and turbine is usually how. If there's a high amount of bores or a high amount of trenching on collection, then we may break that out into a separate person.
The civil that consists of road stabilization, site work, foundation, excavation for foundations, placement of foundations, is that civil?
Yes. Yeah. Roads, county access, foundation construction. Typically the transmission line and the substation, people will handle their civil parts separately. But you know, the civil guy is really more concerned on roads because that is a large scope of the project.
And if we talk about in the application, if it talks about site development and infrastructure work, that would primarily be civil?
Yes.
Okay. And is it fair to say that there's a record amount of construction activity taking place in the wind industry nationally last year, this year? I don't know about next year, but is that fair?
Yeah, over the past couple of years, we've seen more wind projects going on at the same time than I've ever seen.
Right. And is NextEra, your company, have a record level of construction activity right now?
Yes, this will be the most construction we've ever done.
Okay. And what about how much of your construction, NextEra's construction, is being done by Blattner in terms of the particularly focused on the erection of the wind farm component?
So they do the lion's share of the projects. We do have projects going on from Mortenson, Wanzack as well, but they probably do 80%.
Okay. And has the amount of wind construction that's happening nationally right now created challenges for developers in terms of securing contractors and workforce and equipment to get all these projects done at the same time?
Yeah, we really made an effort to lock up contractors for equipment and cranes specifically, much farther in advance than we have in previous years, just because of the amount of competitiveness that we've seen.
So would you say, as a leading wind developer in the country for NextEra, do you think it's important for North Dakotans to take full advantage of the benefits that can be obtained by developing the state's wind resources, especially as customers and owners are trying to take advantage of expiring tax credits?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. And would you agree that construction and maintenance jobs are among the key benefits that can be obtained from wind development?
I think there are a lot of benefits from having wind in North Dakota, but it's certainly one of them.
Okay. So in Mr. Cameron's testimony, and since you're the construction person, I assume you will agree with this, is that you expect construction workers to be hired, quote, first from Burke and Montreal counties and then from other areas in North Dakota. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And in the application, do you have your application available, the 2019 application?
I don't. That'd be something that I'd have to get from Blattner.
Okay.
Oh, you mean in our application for this? Yeah, okay. I don't have it in front of me. Yeah, sorry.
So if I can just read a section, if this sounds right, I just copied it from it. It said it's likely that general skilled labor is available either in the county or the state to serve the basic infrastructure and site development needs. That's the quote from the application. Is that your understanding, that generally skilled labor is available in the county or the state to serve those needs?
So while we've wanted to hire local labor as much as we could, we have not seen the applicants come forward when we've had our job fairs as much as we have in other states like Minnesota. We haven't seen people apply for a number of reasons. I think probably mostly because of competing jobs in the area.
So then that statement is not correct. It is not likely that general skilled labor is available in the county or the state.
It's likely that we'll hire as much skilled labor that's available.
That you'll hire as much skilled labor as available, but you don't. So you're just trying to clarify what your current assessment is of the availability of labor in North Dakota. To do what, I mean, at least the description makes it sound like a lot of the civil, minimally the civil work, there should be skilled labor available. That when you filed the application, that was the statement. But at this point, your assessment is that may not be available.
Historically, that has not been the case. I think that we've seen a lot of changes in North Dakota in the past couple of weeks. I'm hoping that because of the downsize of oil and gas jobs, that we're going to see more than we historically have. I'm looking forward to take advantage of that local labor if it's available.
Okay. Any idea why it says that it's expected to be available in the application if your experience is that it is not available?
I think that really speaks to our commitment to hire available labor, and we're going to continue to do that. I'm going to reserve judgment until we actually see who applies in the job fairs, and we could see a much higher amount than what we've typically seen.
Okay. So in Minnesota, you mentioned Minnesota and getting more applicants. Do you partner with any workforce providers, or does your EPC contractor, I should say, have they partnered with labor unions or the workforce providers to supply skilled labor in Minnesota?
They have in Minnesota, yes.
And has that been successful at delivering local labor?
It has.
Okay. And you're familiar, are you not, with the Emmons-Logan project?
Yes.
Okay. So the expectations, I went back to review the application, and it has a similar expectation about local or North Dakota labor on that project. To your knowledge, was the site development and basic infrastructure work at Emmons-Logan performed by workers from Emmons and Logan counties or elsewhere in North Dakota primarily?
So in that particular project, we got a very low turnout of people applying to that job from local labor. So there was not a high amount of local labor used there.
Were there efforts on that project to partner with any workforce organizations to recruit that local labor or help recruit and train local labor?
No.
Okay. Have you had an opportunity to review Dr. Franco's or Mr. Cortina's pre-filed testimony at all?
I have, yes.
Yeah, okay. And did it surprise you to learn that his estimate was that as few as 6 or 7% of the construction jobs were filled by North Dakotans, or is that consistent with what your knowledge of the project was?
No, it didn't surprise me.
Okay. A question about the information that's being provided would, my screen just expanded on me here. So when there's a notice, so a question about the assessment of the local labor market, Do you think, would NextEra and Blattner be willing to make additional efforts to partner with local organizations to recruit local labor for this project?
I think that every project is a little bit different in terms of partnering with labor now. You know, as we just mentioned, attaining resources was something we had to do farther in advance, and it would be very late stage at this point in order to do something for this project.
But that isn't something that, I mean, despite it being in your application, and despite this being a commitment of the company, and it being something you've done in Minnesota, it wasn't something that you thought about doing in North Dakota?
No, I think we haven't seen the same level of commitment in North Dakota to wind that we've seen from local partners in the union. And that hasn't been our experience, that it would be a replication of what happened in Minnesota.
So is it the case that NextEra is publicly committed to a goal of 60% workforce for wind energy projects, two specific projects in Minnesota?
I can't speak to that. I'd have to get a follow-up on that.
Okay. Assuming that we can substantiate that, is that the kind of goal that NextEra would consider setting for projects in North Dakota? Or a similar goal, perhaps a lower goal that might reflect the what's feasible, but certainly higher than 6%.
Yeah, so I'd say, you know, again, every project is got different factors associated, and I'm not willing to sign up for any goal. I mean, assuming I don't know what kind of labor force is available, and we're not able to attain that, and the project is not going to be able to its commitments, I can't commit to any percentage at this time.
Okay. It was a much higher percentage. Would you agree that the local labor percentage was much higher on the Lake Benton project in southwest Minnesota than in the Ammons Logan project in North Dakota?
Yeah, we've seen much higher local labor available, both union and non-union in Minnesota.
Have you been personally to southwest Minnesota?
I have.
Okay. So, I mean, would you agree that in many ways, southwest Minnesota, you know, we're talking about a rural, predominantly rural agricultural area, not a lot of big population centers there, seems quite similar to where you're both to the area of Emmons Logan and to the proposed Northern Divide project demographically. Is that fair?
I'd say I've been to hundreds of wind farms, and that demographic is similar to almost any wind farm I've ever built.
Okay. So we're talking about recruiting from a similar demographic area, and it's something that's worked in southwest Minnesota. And I guess I'm wondering what you see as the challenges. I guess you mentioned the oil fields, but other than that, what you see as the challenge to doing this a similar effort in North Dakota?
Yeah, I'm just judging that based off of what I've seen from applicants. And again, you know, some areas we've seen a high amount of people apply, you know, whether it's a rural area in Oklahoma or one in California or one in North Dakota. It just depends on you know, what the labor force is interested in at that point in time.
Okay. And is it fair to say that North Dakotans who are members of rural electric co-ops served by Basin will end up helping to pay for this project through their electric bills, assuming they receive electricity from this project?
I can't speak to that. I'll have to defer that question to the development team.
Okay. I think that concludes my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pranis. Commissioner Fedorchuk, did you have any questions for Mr. Harrington?
I just want to quickly sort of recap your testimony with Mr. Pranis, if I could. So basically what you're saying is you're committed to hiring locally as much as you possibly can based on available local workforce and their skills.
Correct.
Okay. I don't have any additional questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Crotchis, do you have any questions?
Just a couple. Thank you, Your Honor. Can you, Sean, tell me, and this is more of a curiosity question, what wind speed on the, when the project's being constructed, do you have to stop and take people off the towers or can't operate the cranes? Is there a general rule?
Yeah, so it depends on the size of the crane, but typically 8 to 10 meters per second, we have to stop. It also depends on how sustained the wind is. So over a certain period of time, if it's sustained for more than 10 minutes or so, then we'll shut down the site and come back on another area, another time rather.
Okay.
Up in the tower, yeah. It's higher. It's more like 15 meters per second, 15 to 18.
Okay, thank you. How is the open hiring process, how is that communicated? The job fairs, you run ads in the newspaper, online advertising, how do you communicate that?
Correct, yeah, there's this is done by RAPCs, but they put out ads in the newspaper and they put out online ads to get that communication out.
Would you classify that communication as very straightforward, easily accessible, or is it more of a touch and go?
We've seen it be successful in a lot of areas, so I think it's successful.
Okay. You had alluded to the fact that oil and gas, the industry is under pressure right now, and when I'm thinking of county labor in particular, or in that immediate part of the state, is it fair to assume that would be more along the lines of road construction, concrete work, that type of thing, but not necessarily with crane operators?
Yeah, crane operators is probably something that you're not going to see much locally unless you have the skill set there. That's something that usually comes from other areas. The civil crews are competed against on almost every industry. But most of the local force would be, in the civil and foundation teams.
And then I think you had mentioned the percentage of workforce on Minnesota projects. Did you indicate about approximately 60%?
That's what Mr. Prentice had said. And I said I needed to follow up on that.
Okay. Okay. Do you have traveling crews, the same crews that you use that move throughout the country?
Yes. Yeah, so both the EPC contractors and myself have crews that move around from project to project.
And how widespread is that?
It really depends on where the projects are. We try to keep them kind of more regional. You know, if I've got a number of projects lined up in the Midwest, we'll keep those teams centered there. There are some years where I've got a lot of West Coast projects and no Midwest, and it just depends on where the projects are at the time.
And are some of those from Kevin's organization?
I'm sorry, say again?
Are some of those from Kevin's organization? I'm just trying to mesh his line of questioning with some of the comments you made.
Oh, I'm not aware of anything from his organization.
And then one last question. You had mentioned Tower Rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's pretty straightforward, but what's involved with the Tower Rescue?
So there, it's a process we use to make sure that we can get someone who is incapacitated down the tower. So there is a rescue device that we bring up tower in order to descend them down through the tower to make sure that they're able to get medical attention at the base of the tower.
Has that ever occurred?
It has, yes.
No other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman, do you have any questions?
Your Honor, I thought Mr. Schmidt and Mr. Peranis had answered all of mine until one of Mr. Harrington's answers. I guess I'm sorry, sir. I'm not quite so sophisticated that I measure wind typically in meters per second. I still use miles per hour. So what is 10 meters per second? Is that like 20 miles an hour about?
Yes. Yeah, it's 20 to, I think it's 22 miles an hour, I think. I could I can look it up for you on my phone. All right, thank you.
All right. Ms. Fury, did you have any redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Schmidt, any other questions?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Pranis, did you have any other questions?
I do have two brief questions. One, you're aware, Mr. Harrington, that NextEra has filed reports and committed to filing additional reports in Minnesota on use of local and non-local workforce on your wind energy projects?
I am.
Is there anything that would prevent NextEra from being able to do so for this project?
Yeah, I question whether those reports would be appropriate without understanding what's involved with them. And then I also think that, you know, getting a snapshot of one project is not going to give you data that's consistent for, I think, the goals of what we're trying to accomplish for that. If that's something that we want to institute, I think the commission would want to consider doing that on a global scale, not just for one particular project.
Right, but if the commission were to begin requiring such reports, nothing will prevent you from providing the same data you provide to the state of Minnesota. Is that correct?
Yeah, sure, and I can't speak to the commission's commitment on that.
Right, and would the company have any objection to being asked to provide that same information if it were also requested of other developers?
We'll provide whatever the commission deems is acceptable and needed for the project.
Thank you. No further questions.
Right. Are there any further questions from the commissioners? All right. Hearing none, it sounds like those are all the questions for you today, Mr. Harrington. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the opportunity. Thanks, everyone.
It's about 12:20, and I think we'll take our lunch break, and we'll reconvene at 1 o'clock.